Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker Football Podcast. My name is Sam Long and I am, once again, your stand-in host as Jake Entwistle is on holiday. Now, our betball picks fell flat last week as chief rustler Jamie Vardy only managed to score one goal against Arsenal instead of the two that we needed him to score, being the absolute fraud that he is. But the show must go on, and joining me this week is Squawker editor Will Hall. How are you, Will?
I'm well. Not too bad.
Short and sweet?
Yeah. I've assumed your role as the no-nonsense respondent.
Also joining us is Squawker social don, Tom Green. How are you, Tom?
Good. Good to be back on the pod, thank you.
Nice. And we are fresh from the Opta quiz, which we went to earlier in the week. We came a mid to low table finish of 26 out of 34, I think it was.
Yeah, so it sounds a lot worse than it is. And let the record show, I thought we shouldn't expose ourselves as the 26th most knowledgeable team in Opta's stable of clubs.
I think considering the average age of our team relative to the questions, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, that is absolutely true, because all the sort of contemporary questions we do really well on, and then when they ask us about 90s
yeah, anything before the 90s.
And also the EFL section was hard.
And yeah. And you didn't cover yourself in glory.
Well, I'd like to say that Jake had a full Arsenal Emirates section that we didn't perform well on.
Not
to dig
Emirates.
Him out too much.
Dig out the man who's not here.
Right, which is tradition on the Squawker Talker, as I well know.
So let's get into it. It is, of course, the international break, but we don't want to be hearing moans and groans and people counting down the days until the return of club football. So we are here to explain why you should care about the international break. We're at the business end of Euro 2020 qualification, and a lot is at stake over the next week or so as nations try and book their place in next summer's tournament. We're going to be picking out three groups and games that you need to keep an eye on. But first, we're going to focus on the qualification process. It's a bit tricky. There's a lot of permutations flying around, but yeah. Will, can you shed some light on it for us?
The first half is straightforward. The second half is confusing to the point where it might become boring. So we'll go through that bit really quickly. But first up, as many people will know, 24 is the number of teams that are set to take part in next summer's tournament. It's the second tournament since UEFA decided to expand it from 16. The number of teams that qualify automatically by virtue of finishing in one of the two top spots in all the groups through A to J, which is 10, is 20, as many people will have worked out by doubling the number. If teams are level on points, then it goes to head-to-head record.
Yep.
Which could well come up based on how these... how this international goes. Yeah, as you're about to say, there's a few teams who are playing each other in second and third spots. And there's a couple major logistical changes to know about Euro 2020 besides the expansion of it. Firstly, is that because it will be hosted in 12 different cities, all of which are in different countries, no one qualified automatically as the eventual runners-up France did in 2016. And in fact, half of the countries that will be hosting it, about half, I should say, because we don't know yet, will probably not have teams actually at the tournament proper. And the second big change is where it gets confusing to the extent that you need a degree in UEFA permutations to understand.
You need Arsene Wenger's job.
is where the UEFA Nations League competition, which the inaugural competition of which took place last summer, steps in, because once you take away all the teams that qualified by finishing in the first or second positions in the 10 groups, you can pretty much disregard the rest of the table, because you revert back to the four leagues A, B, C, and D, the final standings of which determine who which 16 teams take part in the playoffs next summer. And those 16 teams are chosen from the four best ranked teams in each of the four leagues from last summer's competition. Some of those will have already qualified via the groups, in which case you go down to the next best ranked team in each group. And there is one caveat which makes it is a complication on top of a complication, is that group winners can't be pulled up into different paths, as the UEFA call them, to then play against basically better teams from the league above.
Mm.
So those 16 teams take part in the playoffs, which take place next March. By the end of those, we'll have the full lot of 24 teams competing at Euros 2020.
So before we get too bogged down in the qualification quagmire, I'm going to pick up the first game that I've chosen to watch. I've taken on the Mr. Obvious mantle and I've picked Kosovo versus England.
Uh-huh.
Straight in there with picking England.
If Jake was here, he'd have a dig at you for that.
Now, England are nailed on to finish top of Group A with Betport 1-100. And Kosovo are 150-1 to top the group if you want to waste your money. So Gareth Southgate's side need a point from their final two games to qualify. And four will be enough to guarantee top spot. So on paper, it looks like it might be a bit of a non-event. But that was, of course, before Sterling and Gomez decided to beef in the canteen. So I don't need to explain the ins and outs. So everyone's seen the scratch,
uh-huh.
the huge scratch. Bit of a war wound there for Gomez.
It's actually the same reasons that Mo and Jake aren't on this week's episode. Jake had to take a time out after grabbing Mo by the throat and going up to him and saying, you think you're the big man?
So Sterling's out of the Montenegro game, which is obviously tonight. He will be available for the Kosovo game, which is basically Southgate as good as saying that he's going to pick him to play against Kosovo. So it's going to be all eyes on Sterling. I wanted to touch on it because I think what the incident's done is it's brought into focus that Southgate seems to be at a bit of a crossroads in that his success with England has been built on openness, which the media have obviously gobbled up the opportunity to have more interaction and engagement with the squad, which in turn has brought fans closer to the team again. I feel like it's a bit of a risk now that because of the way that incident unfolded and the speed that the details of it came out in the press, that Southgate might have second thoughts about leaving those doors as open.
Yeah, it's a good point to raise, actually, because the main thrust of the criticism against Southgate for this one was that he should have kept it in-house.
Mm.
This was what Rio Ferdinand said, and he definitely wasn't alone in making that criticism. But as you say, Southgate's reputation has kind of been built on that promoting in transparency.
Mm.
And you can't really, it would be a bit hypocritical to then turn around and say, okay, we'll have transparency, but not over certain incidents.
Exactly. And I think it would have
only the good stuff.
I think it would have looked much worse on Southgate if he had tried to cover it up and then it had got out in the press that there had been a physical confrontation and he sort of tried to bury it. I mean, obviously there will be loads and loads of incidents that have happened in changing rooms up and down the country over the years that haven't come to light. But if you're actively trying to conceal it when you've promoted such an openness within the camp, then that would go against you as well, I think. Because it feels, again, like the feel-good factor that we had at the World Cup is on the brink of not extinguishing completely, but it's definitely on the wane.
Yeah, it's to the point where people are now sort of looking at the teams we did beat, like Tunisia, and saying, well, was it really that impressive?
Yeah. So Southgate really needs...
Which I don't go along with, incidentally. I had a really good time following England and watching them get to a semi-final, but I think it's just a reflection of the mood and the sort of mounting... It's an interesting study in how you can be the media's golden boy one day and then it can sort of slowly turn against you and things that it praised you for in the past become sticks to beat you with almost.
I mean, the questions are always going to come. It's inevitable until England win the World Cup. Then there is always going to be sticks out there for you to be beat with. All the Euros, yeah.
On home turf, no less. Next season, as Wembley will host the final.
So Southgate, I don't think he was his usual sort of composed self in a couple of press conferences, and he really needs now a couple of straightforward wins to draw the line under the incident and move on, because those questions are really going to start growing louder if we go into the not international break, but the gap between here and the tournament with a bit of with some question marks hanging over him. But to the game itself, everyone remembers the 5-3 against Kosovo earlier in qualifying, when England conceded after 30 seconds and it became a bit of a crazy game. They were 5-1 up at half time, but obviously had a really poor second half. So fingers crossed it's going to be another thriller. But what we're definitely going to get is a very young England team, purely because it's a very young England squad. Of the 24-man squad that he's got at the moment, half of them are age 22 or under. So we may well see a team that's actually younger than the one which he played when England beat Spain in Seville last year. I think the age there was about 23, so we could see an even younger 11 than that. And it'll be nice to see the likes of Abraham up front, Tomori, Madison, all those players playing together, rather than just having a couple of them sprinkled into the side, to actually have them all starting at once. It almost feel like a bit of a new era almost. And as for Kosovo as well, they've proven to be a bit of a surprise package. And even if they do fall short and don't end up qualifying from the group, by virtue of their Nations League place, as you touched on earlier, Will, they've already got a playoff place. I definitely wouldn't want to be drawing them.
No. It would be that, I think this is their first it would definitely be their first major tournament. I believe this is their first qualification campaign as well. A very young national team.
Yeah.
In the sense of the actual national team itself rather than the players making it up.
And I actually picked out a little stat on England. So they've scored 27 goals in 8 matches in 2019, an average of 3.4 per game, and are very much on course to surpass the 30 mark, which they haven't done since 1982. So 3 short of that with 2 games left. You'd definitely fancy them to do it, especially if they are involved in another thriller with Kosovo, which is what I am predicting. I think it'll be 4-2. Okay, so next up we've got Tommy G, who has had a look at Wales, who have got 2 very important games.
Yeah, so Wales during this international break have got Azerbaijan away and then Hungary at home. So ideally, they're going to need 6 points from those games, and they're also going to need a favour from Croatia or Azerbaijan, because they need Slovakia to drop points to overtake them to get that second point, their second position. So in the reverse fixtures, Wales have actually already beaten Azerbaijan 2-1 at home, thanks to an 84th-minute goal from Gareth Bale, but they lost 1-0 away to Hungary. So I'm going to apologise to any Azerbaijani fans here, because we're going to make the assumption that Wales are going to beat Azerbaijan and focus more on the Hungary game. Ryan Giggs' Wales have actually struggled in the scoring department during this qualifying campaign. They've only scored 6, which is second lowest in the group, to Azerbaijan, who have only scored 5. But given the fact that Azerbaijan are only on 1 point, that kind of shows you how bad it is.
Yeah.
But their greatest asset is in fact their defence. They've conceded the fewest number of goals in the group at 6. So they're going to, if they can keep that that defence rock solid during these 2 games and maybe increase in the scoring department, they should have a good chance. I've actually picked out a couple of Hungary players to look out for, those of you who may not be aware of the players in the Hungary team. Their 2 biggest players actually comprise both the Hungary defence and the RB Leipzig defence. Liverpool fans may be aware of their goalkeeper, Peter Gulácsi, who incidentally spent 6 years at the club, but never actually made an appearance for them. He's actually completely turned his career around at RB Leipzig. He's kept the most clean sheets in the Bundesliga since 2016-17 at 33. And then the other player I picked out is Willy Orban, a centre-back who was evidently born in Germany but of Hungarian descent, who also plays for RB Leipzig. And he's won more aerial duels, 396, than any other player in the Bundesliga since 2016-17. Evidently, he's also their joint highest scorer in this Euro qualifying campaign with two goals. No, no guesses as to where those two goals came from. Set piece headers. But I thought I should also look at a player on the other side of the pitch who could be a danger man for Hungary against Wales, and that is Dominik Szoboszlai.
Apologies. Nailed it.
Yeah, apologies if I'm butchering that name there. So he's a 19-year-old up-and-coming talent who happens to play for another Red Bull side, this time not Leipzig but Salzburg.
This is the Red Bull takeover.
Exactly, Red Bull, they dominate the Hungary side.
They sponsor him by any chance.
But he's tipped as one of the biggest upcoming prospects, not only in Hungary but in Europe. And he's a pacey, creative attacking midfielder who's actually been directly involved in 8 goals in his 16 matches for RB Salzburg across all competitions this season. So he's got that nice link up with another Salzburg star, Haaland. And he's actually scored 1 goal in this qualifying campaign so far, and that was against Slovakia. And if you have not seen it, I would definitely recommend watching it, because it was a beautiful direct free kick that went straight into the top bins from just outside of the box.
There's also the return of Aaron Ramsey that could have a massive influence on this one. I think he missed both of their Wales international fixtures in the previous break, which they drew 1-1. So,
as always, Rambo
tip the scales in favour of Wales.
So Wales are 2-1 with Betball to qualify and 4-11 to fall short. And it'd be interesting to see if Ryan Giggs's future gets called into question, really, if he doesn't qualify.
Knocking one step backwards away from that Manchester United job.
Yeah, I mean, first things first, they've got to go to Azerbaijan, which probably not.
Oh, backtracking that.
Which you already dismissed as a foregone conclusion.
So are we back in Wales to qualify?
No.
Brutally honest.
Yeah, why not? I think they could do it. I'm part Welsh, so.
So for the third game that we're going to look at, it's Northern Ireland versus Netherlands in Group C. And Will, you've taken a look at this for us.
Sure. This is why you should watch it, or at least care about the result. If you do want to watch it, it's on at 7:45 on Saturday, Sky Sports, so you'll miss the end of Strictly. But Ooh. It could be worth it. Northern Ireland probably have to beat both Netherlands at home and Germany away in their final two games to qualify directly for the tournament next summer because of that head-to-head. They've lost, during the last international break, they lost to both those opponents. So to tip the scales backwards the other way and record that superior head-to-head advantage, they have to win. Meanwhile, on the other side of things, just a point, we'll see Netherlands qualify for their first major international tournament in 6 years since 2014 under Louis van Gaal at the Brazil World Cup, of course.
Which feels like so long ago.
I know. And so this is the first alluring aspect of this fixture, is that are this Netherlands team back? We obviously saw them take part in the Nations League final last summer. And they, as I said, stand upon the brink of qualifying for a major international tournament. I think we've missed Holland at international tournaments. If you just consider the special moments they gave us under Van Gaal, we had that Van Persie header, the Tim Krul substitute, the remaking of Louis Van Gaal's reputation, which in turn had a huge knock-on effect or influence on the Premier League, in that you could argue got him that Manchester United job. This new Netherlands generation has quality throughout, though. We've got Virgil van Dijk and De Ligt at the back. According to our colleague Mohamed Moelim, it might be the Netherlands' best centre-back partnership since Jaap Stam and Frank de Boer. Van Dijk is, in fact, their third highest goal scorer as well, interestingly, under Koeman, with 4 goals. Then further ahead of them, you've got De Jong, Wijnaldum. Then up top, you've got Depay, who's been in exceptional form under Koeman. He has 11 goals and 7 assists since the managerial change. And I think last season he had like the second most chances in Europe's top 5 leagues. Mm.
And there's some links coming out, isn't there? He's been linked with Spurs.
Well, Koeman's doing some of the work there himself. He came out and said he said he should be playing for a team bigger than Lyon. And on the subject of Koeman, he is a manager who seems to have no filter. He described Northern Ireland's style of play, defensive slash counter-attacking style of play, as terrible to watch after the 3-1 win during the last international break. So there's a bit of needle already there. Those comments obviously didn't go down too well with Northern Ireland, whose display was described as gutsy by more charitable reviews. And it is a genuine achievement that Northern Ireland even find themselves in this position to qualify directly, to have it be possible for them to qualify directly for Euro 2020 ahead of Germany and the Netherlands. It makes more sense when you realise that the chance they do have is propped up pretty much exclusively by their ability to beat the teams they realistically could expect to beat, Estonia and Belarus. And in fact, they won all four of their first games in the competition, home and away to those two opponents. But this also signals the end of an era for Northern Ireland in that Michael O'Neill, their manager, the man who qualified Northern Ireland for their first ever European Championships 4 years ago, already joined Stoke. He's going to oversee the last two qualifiers in this international break and then any playoffs that may follow in March.
I think that's a really strange move from him, because his stock is so high to take a job.
Yeah,
where Stoke are sort of on a downer.
Yeah, I know the potential at the club.
Yeah, exactly.
Of Stoke is if he gets them out there, the potential to then build on that, maybe even get them back into the Premier League.
But this is it. You only get one shot at that when your stock is so high. Because if he goes to Stoke and he doesn't hit the ground running, we could be looking at March and they're in League One.
Yeah, could do. I think it's still a big club with potential, as Tom's alluded to there. And
all I'm saying is I think it's more likely he's going to do a Chris Coleman.
than a Chris Wilder. Another element to this end of an era sense is that there are also fears expressed by Gareth McCauley, I believe, that Stephen Davis could announce his international retirement. He's 34 now, but he's impressing a lot of people back in the Scottish Premiership, where under Stephen Gerrard there's a real chance of helping his boyhood club Rangers to their first league title since the liquidation. He actually left them at that point, so there might be a chance to address, stain's too strong a word, but a blotch on his record with that club. And one of the best things about international football, I think, is how it puts players we're familiar with in totally different contexts. Because we'll all know Stephen Davis as this unassuming constant in that Southampton team since they returned to the Premier League.
Yeah.
But he's actually also considered one of the greatest players in Northern Ireland's history and will break the record for most caps, not just with Northern Ireland, but of any midfielder for any of the home nations by making his 116th appearance against the Netherlands in this game. So he's level with David Beckham right now, so overtakes him in his next game. And after that, it'll only be a couple goalkeepers, I think, Pat Jermyns and Peter Shilton. And then Wayne Rooney on 120 would be the only outfielder across Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales and England national teams with more international appearances than Davis. So, yeah, could be. I think this will be.
So what's your prediction?
My prediction is another good display to be proud of from Northern Ireland. But I think Netherlands, with the quality that players like De Jong has in unlocking stubborn defences, could just eke out the win. So I'd say 2-1 or 1-0 Netherlands.
I actually fancy Northern Ireland to get a draw.
Oh, really? I don't think that's not going to be quite good enough to take them through, because the Netherlands have the head-to-head advantage, but it would be a fitting farewell, perhaps, for O'Neill in his last home game, I think, as Northern Ireland manager, if they don't make the playoffs.
It'd be interesting to see who's throwing their hat into the ring for that job.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of names mentioned, but I don't know enough about the situation to go into it perhaps here.
So they're the three games we picked out. I've also looked at another couple of potential narratives. So Italy, Spain, Belgium, as well as Denmark and Ukraine are unbeaten, but it's only Italy and Belgium who have 100% record. So they're worth keeping an eye on, as everybody loves a 100% perfect qualifying record. France have Moldova and Albania left to play, both of whom they should comfortably get past. But they're only level on points at the top of Group H with Turkey. And Turkey have Iceland, who are on 15 points. Again, sorry if this gets a bit confusing. So that group's going to be really interesting, especially if Iceland get a result against Turkey, then they'll be going into the last game
I was reading today as well that the Turkish players and team felt disrespected by Iceland due to, I think...
Travel problems.
Yeah. And then I saw somewhere that one of the Icelandic reporters, when interviewing a Turkish player, held like a hairbrush out in place of a mic for some reason. Why, I don't know. But yeah, there's a lead for an interesting story if anyone wants to have a bit of a Google on their lunch break.
And then Republic of Ireland, who we obviously haven't touched on, potentially they're going to have a winner-takes-all game against Denmark. They're level on 12 as it stands, but by the time they kick off on Monday, they could have dropped to third. And then that's where a potential three-way tie could come in with Switzerland, which could mean that even a win won't be enough for Ireland. They might have to beat Denmark by two clear goals, which always sort of plays havoc with how you approach the
game.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you know that you need to win by a certain amount of goals, do you go flat out straight away or do you put a handbrake on until half time, etc., etc.? And also, Portugal are in a bit of danger. They've got Lithuania and Luxembourg. Again, two games you would definitely fancy them to beat. But Serbia are waiting in the wings if they do drop points. So if they have a sort of nervous draw...
They possess the crown of the Nations League as well. So I think they're guaranteed their playoff spot. But, you know,
it's just
a playoff spot.
And then we could be looking at potentially Euro 2020 without Cristiano.
I don't think that's going to happen, but...
So that's all the qualification talk wrapped up. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to round things off with a bit of beef. So now the serious stuff is out of the way, we're going to finish off on a bit of fun. As we've already mentioned, there was quite a lot of beef in the England camp this week with Sterling and Gomez coming to blows, or fisticuffs. At the very least, it was fisticuffs.
And other cliches.
So in tribute to this infighting, I want to know who you both think is the hardest player in the current England squad. There's a couple of obvious candidates.
The real big man.
The real big man.
Yeah.
Harry Slabhead Maguire.
Okay.
Jordan Stomping Pickford. Harry Goody Two Shoes Kane. Who do you reckon is the tough guy?
Right. Out of just those three.
No, out of the whole squad. Any other shouts? I've got another one who I think is...
So I actually took to FIFA to answer this question for us.
Kelsey did.
Of the current England squad... Harry Maguire has the most strength at 90. So if we're going on purely strength, I wouldn't want to be taking him because he's probably got the high advantage as well.
Okay. I remember before the World Cup, FIFA's database, however credible you think it is, revealed. I mean, and I don't mean the game. I mean FIFA's actual... governing body, football database had Harry Kane as the heaviest or second heaviest player at the World Cup. Which would, by extension,
Chunky.
Make him...
I should have done with that. Harry Chunky Kane, it should
have been, shouldn't it? Yeah, so assuming he's not cut down, that would make him the heaviest England player.
So just weighing in...
On mass, he's got to be the a contender for that reason alone.
Well, I've got a shout, and it's something that you definitely won't be able to measure on FIFA the game, which is that craziness...
Right.
And it is Tyrone Mings.
Okay.
Because lest we forget that his finishing move is the stamp, as Nelson Oliveira knows all too well. And Zlatan, of course.
Right.
So I fancy Mings.
Okay.
Mings Maguire, I think Mings would...
The problem is the Southgate squad and they all just seem too nice.
They're a family.
I like them all too much, yeah.
I think what Gareth Southgate needs to do, if he's picking England players on strength alone, is give Adebayo Akinfenwa his first call-up.
Yeah.
Get him in, come and sort him out.
Okay. Then that would make this section a lot easier.
Then we've got a clear winner.
So obviously Gomez and Sterling coming to blows. I thought straight away, bit of a mismatch because Gomez would just batter Sterling. I would say. Oh, well, okay. I don't know. Are we disagreeing on that?
No.
I think Gomez.
Gomez clear winner.
Sorry, yeah. Raheem.
But. So I have picked out some other potential matchups, sure. which I think are a bit fairer, and then I want you guys to okay. choose the winner. So first up, we have Jordan Peacemaker Henderson against
whoever it is. Jordan Henderson loses this one. I
yeah,
think.
Loses.
He's a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah.
Okay. But he's up against Declan, better than Bobby Moore, Rice.
Declan Rice is a beast, so...
Declan Rice, yeah. Declan Rice, ding, ding.
Okay, I'll give it to Rice as well.
Rice as well. I think I would have had Henderson there.
But as what? It's, yeah.
What?
He's yeah. stacked.
He's probably got dad strength on Declan Rice as well, I assume.
And then next up, we've got Kieran Rundog Trippier versus Trent... Double A Alexander Arnold.
The battle of the right backs.
The battle of the right backs.
That's a tough one. I'll go Kieran Trippier because he's got the experience.
Experience. Trent's got the height.
He's got the range. I'm backing the range in this one.
The range.
Yeah. If Trippier was like an aggressive guy, then he'd already had his own sort of Sterling versus Gomez incident, Atletico Madrid. Purely for True. The fact that they all keep calling him Rooney everywhere he goes.
Although he's got Diego Costa there as well, isn't he? I don't think you want to be...
I know, but come on. You're not the big man if you're taking that level of abuse.
Okay, next up, another midfield battle. So Alex the Ox, obviously. Uh-huh. Oxlade-Chamberlain against Harry, nice guy, Winks.
Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Oxlade-Chamberlain is that, yeah.
Comfortably?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. He's got that stocky power that I think would serve him well.
Winks is literally the nice guy as well. I like Winks. He's always got a smile on his face as well. I just don't think he's got the aggression to beat someone up.
Doesn't have it in him. Okay, now we've got forwards. Man like Rashi, Marcus Rashford, uh-huh. against SE's finest, Jadon Sancho.
Some of these are too...
Too well matched.
Weird.
I don't know.
Well,
matchmaker.
Yeah, to even have an opinion on. Rashford, just he's older. I reckon age. He's been playing football at senior men's level for longer, so he'll be a bit more battle scarred than Sancho.
I think Sancho's got a bit of a scrap in him, though. Okay. Turning up late for training.
Yeah.
Bit of
that's true.
Potential attitude problems.
Right.
I'll go with Rashford.
Losing father wasn't happy.
I'll go with Rashford to quote Will because he's got the hype.
Okay. And then the final one is two players who aren't actually in the squad.
Right.
Which is Jack Peaky Blinder Grealish against Jesse Jaylings Lingard.
Jack Grealish.
I would have
I
Grealish.
I don't know why.
I'd have Grealish all day. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely got the
I don't know if you said him in your initial batch, but Pickford has that mad dog. When you see him react
stomping
to mistakes at the back, he does look a bit unhinged. Echoes of the mad goalkeepers of old that we've bemoaned a lack of on a previous recording. So I think he'd be my hardest member of the squad entirely.
I think there's definitely a good few scraps in there.
Yeah. God, Southgate's done all right, isn't he, to keep peace for this long.
So that's a wrap for this week. Thanks from me. Thanks to my guest, Will.
No problem.
And Tom.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to BetBall, our sponsors. Make sure you check out their app and download it if you are over 18 and gambling responsibly. Enjoy the international break and we'll catch you next time.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.